that working? Okay. So everything I'm talking about today is joint work, as you know, with Erwin Lettbach and Gaoyang Zhang. And this is a talk that more or less I've given before, and also I understand Erwin gave it at Oberwolfach. So if you've heard it before, my apologies. There are some updates, but overall it's the same. So as this says, it's, the talk is going to be kind of a broad overview, basically talking about extending work that we've done in the past to a more general theory. So first, I'm going to present, I'm trying to figure out how to page down here. Spacebar. Nothing seems to be working. Oh, there. Okay, clicking on the mouse button seems to work. Okay, so that's an outline, but let me just keep going. So first, you all are familiar with these terms, which I'll be using. You know, the support function will be defined on all of our n, so it's homogeneous and convex. And there's the polar body. And then I want to begin by just going through a spiel that Erwin, I think, originated, but I'm going to, and some you've probably all seen before, but it's going to be written slightly differently because we need to do things a little differently. So you all know what the Minkowski sum is, and you know that it's given, if the bodies are convex, then the Minkowski sum is obtained by just simply adding the support functions. But you'll note that I've written it in a funny way. And that's an anticipation for the formulas later. So basically, I'm going through this to show you how to sort of set things up for Ehrlich theory, where basically we want to give up a homogeneity condition. So, and you're all familiar with a classical Brim-Minkowski inequality. But again, notice that I've written it differently. I've put everything onto one side, and there's a one left. Okay. So Erwin was the first one to say, well, you know, I mean, I guess Fiery is the one who introduced generalized this, but Erwin kind of really took it much further. And so the idea is that to view the classical theory as just an L1 theory. And so here I've just stuck the ones in. Otherwise, this slide is exactly the same as the previous slide. And so then, as you all know by now, you can replace all those ones by P's, and you still get a theory that can be studied and works very well. And so you can define an LP sum, and so you can see that you're taking LP sums, and then there is an LP Brim-Minkowski inequality, which follows directly from the L1 inequality. Okay. So we want to take this a step further. So the observation is that this works basically only for p greater than or equal to 1, and the function x goes to x to the p power for x positive. The relevant property, there has two key properties that are used in the Brim-Minkowski theory. It's homogeneous, and it's also convex. And those are the two key properties. And so the question is that we want to explore is whether we can keep the convexity property, which appears to be quite crucial, but give up on the homogeneity. And so the question is there an L phi Brim-Minkowski theory? So here phi is a function on the real line that is convex, but not no longer assumed to be homogeneous. And it's also not assumed necessarily to be symmetric, not necessarily assumed to be an even function. So we're also trying to give up on that. And so the question is, can you maybe, so now I've just more or less replaced the p's by phi's, or the p's power function by the phi function. And the question is, can we do something like this? And these are questions, because there are no, we don't know yet. And then maybe these are not the right definitions. But the idea is, the goal is to do something, to build a more general theory like that of this nature. So here phi is a function on the real line that's convex, and we do want it always to go through the origin. That is That's a good question. That's after the fee. But you know, just a question. You're allowed to correct me on this. Oh, it's convex, and it's going through the origin, and it's positive. Yeah, so, yeah. It's a nice bowl-shaped function. Taking it further, let me remind you that by differentiating the Brim-Minkowski inequality, well, first differentiating volume with respect to one of these sums, you get a notion of surface area. We call it mixed volume, but I always call it surface area, a generalized notion of surface area. And then if you differentiate the Brim-Minkowski inequality, you get an isoparametric inequality. So this is all well known. And you know, and again, you can generalize this to LP. This is known. Okay. And not hard to, the LP inequalities here just follow from the L1 inequality. And so again, the question is, can we do something similar? Okay. And the answer is we don't know yet. So these things have yet to be really worked out in detail. So the situation is a little upside down. The elementary stuff we haven't worked out yet, but we have worked out some of the more complicated stuff. So there's a recent paper in collaboration with Christoph Haberl where there should be an adjective here, the even LC Minkowski problem. So we've been able to solve the Minkowski problem in this setting. There is a definition of the LP projection body extending what's known as the LP projection body. I'll go through that carefully in a sec. And so then we are able to extend the LC projection inequality, generalizing the Petty projection inequality, classical Petty projection inequality. There is, as mentioned in the previous talk, there is a definition of the LP centroid body, and then there's a proof of the LP centroid inequality. So, you know, in our view, this is a promising start to extending, you know, this project of extending things without the homogeneity assumption of that's required in the LP Brim-Minkowski inequality. Okay. A natural question is why bother? And I don't think that we have a complete answer to this, but so far, I think we have two compelling reasons. One is that there is an existing theory and analysis for Orlich-Sobolev inequalities, and studying the basically PDEs that where you use non-homogeneous energy functionals. By far, most PDE theory studies. Energy function is defined using an LP norm of some sort, and there's homogeneity. But there are reasons to want to give up on that. And so there has been a sort of a parallel, well, earlier work, really to be precise, on trying to prove Orlich-Sobolev inequalities and proving estimates for PDEs where you don't have homogeneity. We, as well as many other people, have studied the connections between geometric inequalities, the isoparametric inequalities, and Sobolev inequalities. And so it is natural to ask whether there are geometric sort of analogs of all this work and analysis. I should say, we hope to center back towards analysis because actually in analysis, they don't always, especially initially, focus on sharp inequalities. And in fact, as far as I know, most of the work on Orlich-Sobolev has been non-sharp. And so it is our belief that as we understand the geometric situation better, we can circle back and help prove sharp inequalities in the analytic setting. So that's one motivation. And the other one is that, you know, there is the LP theory, which I've already discussed. And more recently, Christoph Haberl and Franz Schuster have been extending a lot of work in Brim-Minkowski theory to an asymmetric theory where they don't assume that the peak power function, they chop off half of it, I guess is one way to put it, and assume asymmetry, and also, you know, and to not assume symmetry. And so the idea is to try to come up with an approach that kind of unifies everything and kind of organizes everything very more clearly and you know, makes everything look a little less ad hoc. So those are the two main motivations right now for our work. Okay. So let me review the projection body. So I'm really terrible at drawing. One of the downsides of using these slides is that drawing pictures is a lot harder, and I never do. And the projection body, of course, is much better explained if you draw a picture. So the idea is that, of course, what you're doing is you're projecting, you're looking at shadows of a body projected on hyperplanes and measuring the area of the shadows. And it turns out that if the area of the shadow is a function of the direction, and so that's what this integral basically represents, is the area of the shadow. There's a 1/2 because that integral double counts. And so what's a remarkable fact is that it just defines a new convex body. I'm going over this even though I'm sure you all know this already. And then there's a classical Petty projection inequality, which says that if you look at the polar projection body, which really means that instead of viewing this integral as a support function, you view it as defining the radius of a body that's convex, another body. So you have this projection inequality. And this can be viewed also as a generalized isoperimetric inequality. And then, a while back, we, as well as Stefano Campi and Paolo Granci, proved the LP version. Okay. So now it becomes less geometric, but the idea is that by sticking in a piece power in the appropriate place, we can obtain a more general family of bodies and prove projection equality. So again, the question is, can you extend this to non-homogeneous things? So here's the way you have to do it. Without homogeneity, you kind of have to do everything kind of indirectly. And I think of this as kind of from the point of view of dimensional analysis, is that phi is now inhomogeneous. So whatever you stick into phi has to be a dimensionless quantity. Okay, it can't have dimension to it because you're not allowed to rescale. You want things to be able to rescale. And so whatever you stick inside the phi, you have to cancel all the dimensions out. And so the normal vector is sort of one dimension. It lives in the dual space. And so it has to cancel. And it has to have the right homogeneity. So the net thing is homogeneous degree zero. And the Vs are in the space itself, and they have to cancel out. And so this is the way it works out. And so the idea is that, again, like the formulas I showed at the beginning, the trick is to take the support function and kind of push it inside the right side and leave a one on the right side. Okay? And so we have a recent paper, as I mentioned at the beginning, that extends this. And so this is a sharp inequality, and it extends all the previous results that I mentioned. The polar, that's called a typo.
Okay.
My apologies. Yeah. I can't seem to get rid of all the typos. Okay, and it is true that I would say we still have not been able to work out everything in full generality. So if phi is strictly convex, we're able to establish the equality condition. So this is clearly not, so in this sense, we don't encompass all previous results because this does not include the equality condition of the original Petty projection inequality. It's the first power, so that's not strictly convex. So there's still a little bit of room for improvement here. What becomes, when you define the support function of pi phi this way, indirectly, so the support function of pi phi is there inside the phi, convexity becomes a little less obvious than it is, the fact that that is an honest-to-goodness support function becomes less obvious, okay? I just wanted to sort of go over this a little bit because it gives you a little bit of flavor of the proof. I mean, the proof in some sense of the LP projection equality is, in some, I guess what I would say, morally speaking, is really the same as the proof as for the Petty projection and the LP Petty projection equality. We basically do Steiner symmetrization, use convexity to get all the inequalities going in the right direction. But because you lose homogeneity, you have to kind of rearrange everything and do everything a little bit differently. And so just to illustrate the flavor of this, I thought I'd go over the convexity of the support function. Now, since it's a generic argument, I'm going to just work with a probability measure. I'm not even going to tell you where the probability measure lives. So if C is a homogeneous function, so in other words, a p-th power function, then the way we define the an associated support function this is what I get for preparing this talk, adding this at the last minute. There should be a phi of C dot X. Okay, so there should be a phi inside the integrand there. And so this is the way, so you can define it sort of like that. If you think about the projection body, LP projection body, that's how it's defined. If it's not homogeneous, then what you have to do, as I said, is you have to stick the H inside the phi. And so that makes what, so this is a way to define kind of like a phi centroid body out of a measure mu. Okay? The projection body is really just a centroid body for some probability measure. And so this is it's a special case of this formula. Okay? So we need to show that the H we get out of here is convex. Okay? Notice that H is automatically homogeneous of degree 1. Okay? Because of it. So all you need to do is make sure that it's convex. And since it's degree 1, convex is the same as being subadditive, being like, satisfies the triangle inequality. So here's how you do it. On one hand, by definition, you have, if you have two vectors, C and eta, then you have that formula for H of C and eta. But on the other hand, by the convexity of phi, you have this argument. So this replaces, actually, let me just go back for a sec. See, back here, in the original formula, again, imagining the phi over there, the convexity of phi more or less makes H convex almost automatically. It's a very, very simple argument, but more direct. But here, once you give up on the homogeneity, you have to work a little bit harder and rearrange things. But it's, once you get the hang of it, it is relatively straightforward. Okay. So here, this sequence of inequalities, which basically follow from the convexity of phi, says that this thing, if you had this thing in the denominator, then it's less than 1. So this thing is too big to make the equality hold. So it's bigger than than the actual value of the support function. In terms of the proof of the projection equality itself, like previous proof, so otherwise the strategy is similar to our previous proof. So the idea is to show that Steiner symmetrization, basically of the projection polar projection body, is smaller than the polar projection body of the symmetrization. And now the cost of going to phi using a phi, a non-homogeneous function, is that, so in the previous, in our LP paper, we end up showing that, the body is invariant under any Steiner symmetrization, that it's bounded by, I mean, let's see, basically we can study the sinusoidal miniaturization in any direction. With a fee, we only get information about a dense set of sinusoidal miniaturizations. And so we need this following fact, which turned out to be surprisingly difficult to find this actually written down carefully in the literature, although it seems pretty obvious.
Any dense sequence. In any order
The dual to this is the L1 centroid body, and there's the classical Boosman-Petty inequality that gives a bound on that. And then as I mentioned before, again, there's an LP version, and but again, we along with Stefano Campi and Paolo Granci approved an inequality for this. And in this case, what we actually showed is that this inequality is in some sense equivalent to the LP projection inequality. And so it actually only suffices to prove one of them, and then the other one follows as a consequence. Okay. So again, the idea is that you can do a fee equivalent. So there's an obvious, so again, here, this thing surely should be a probability measure, so you should divide by the volume of K here to make that definition correct, and then there's an inequality. And again, the key thing is to study the behavior of the centroid body under sinusoidal miniaturization, and in this case, the key tool to use is our following generalization of a classical characterization of an ellipsoid. So it's well known that if you have a body where if you look at midpoints of chords, if that's always a linear subspace, no matter what direction you look at the chords in, then it's an ellipsoid. If you think about it, in some sense, all you really need to know is that you only need to just know this for a small set of chords. You don't really need this for all chords. This was made precise by Peter Gruber using some work of Peter with Monica Ludwig on this. You only need a little bit of information. Again, this was needed because in some sense we, unlike the LP case, we were not able to get information about all chords, but only for an open set of them near the origin. And so we needed this more general result. I'd like to end with some open questions that we have. So as I mentioned before, for the LP projection inequality, we only get the equality condition for strictly convex functions phi. And so the question is, what happens when phi is only merely convex? Given that the Petty projection inequality has an equality condition, it would seem to indicate that you should get the equality condition in this more general case too, but we have not been able to do that yet. There's something called the class reduction method that was introduced by Irwin, which shows how to extend arguments from convex bodies to star bodies. And this works in the homogeneous Brun-Minkowski theory, but we do not yet know how to extend that to Orlich, the Orlich Brun-Minkowski theory. And finally, as I mentioned before, in the LP case, there's this equivalence between the centroid inequality and the projection inequality. It allows you to go back and forth easily. And we do not know how to do that in the Orlich case. And so that's another question. Okay, that's all I have for today. Thank you.